Happy NBA Draft Lottery Day. It's always a good television at halftime tonight, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I'm on the edge of my seat already.
Well, before we get to Colangelo, who needs an impact player the most? You got Charlotte sitting there. They've got a great chance. They missed on Davis last year. Orlando, right? They need a lot. Rob Hennigan needs a lot to help out there.
Well, the interesting thing about this pick, and with Noel being still the consensus number one, even though he's hurt, and a few other guys, I mean, Anthony Bennett being a top five pick, the Canadian kid, who's with a shoulder surgery. What's interesting in a way, especially for people who, you know, kind of acknowledge it or believe that the draft is so essential to building a turning around the team, is in some ways you want, it helps you to pick a guy like Nerlens Noel or Anthony Bennett. And you know, it's almost like the Valanciunas situation where you get the player, you get the asset, and, you might even have a chance to be in the lottery again next year without having to do anything kind of nefarious like tank. And that's, you know, history shows sometimes that's how teams actually catch a break is you take a team like Charlotte, for example, maybe they pick Noel and a year from now they're picking in the top five in a really strong draft. And then you look back 5 years later and they've got, how were they able to be like Oklahoma City and accumulate three or four really elite talents in the draft, and it's sometimes a fluke like that.
That's amazing you say that. Six of the 10 teams this year have the 10 worst records this year. Six of the teams are the same from last year. So yeah, drafting and being crappy didn't really help you going from year to year.
Not instantly, but over time, you'd think it would.
You'd think.
The great secret of San Antonio was, of course, the reason they got Tim Duncan was when they won the draft lottery. The reason they were in the draft lottery was David Robinson, way back when, missed the whole season for back surgery. So they lost 60 games, and then they picked Tim Duncan. But the same year they picked Tim Duncan, David Robinson came back healthy, and all of a sudden they were in the NBA Finals.
So what exactly will Brian Colangelo's role with MLSE be from this day going forward?
Do you want me to make it up or tell you I'm not
well,
really sure?
They might be making it up. Will he be? Will he leave to be a scout for the Anaheim Ducks within the next 3 months?
I guess what I do know is this. I mean, there's been sort of mixed reports, and what I can say is he will have some input on the basketball operations. Now, in the next breath, it's acknowledged that you're not going to get a top GM prospect to come when he's not going to have sort of autonomy over the basketball operation. So when you put those two things together, I'm expecting to hear Brian Colangelo is going to have a role like an advisor to Tim Nowicki on basketball or an advisor to the MLSC board on, you know, and basketball would be part of the things he would almost on a consulting role where it would only, they could kind of cross-reference or cross-check the stuff that their basketball people are talking about, and just gives them another voice and somebody to kind of maybe use as a resource. So that's kind of what I'm expecting, but this whole thing is a little bit unexpected. And, where there's supposed to be a conference call today, and maybe we'll understand a little more clearly exactly what that is.
What's the appeal of Ujiri? I know he's been here. He knows Toronto well. He's done a good job in Denver without a superstar there. They traded Carmelo, got some bits and pieces. They extricated Iguodala. He's been good since getting there. And probably his crowning move was drafting Ty Lawson as late as he did, and Lawson turning into the impact point guard he has.
Yeah, I mean, I think his appeal is he went into a Denver situation that I think they were a 53-win team when he got there. He's turned over every single guy in their roster except Ty Lawson, and they're a 57 or 8-win team this year. So, I mean, that's pretty, and they never missed the playoffs. So basically, you've turned over a whole team and got better while never taking a backward step. I mean, that's a pretty remarkable move. I think he's also just simply a one of the people in the NBA that everyone likes, which is pretty unusual, because usually you end up pissing off half the people to earn the favor of the other half. But I think the fact that he does have ties to Toronto is significant, right? Because I think the Raptors and Toronto are an amazing market, a great NBA opportunity, but they're not like all the other teams. It is a little bit different. And I think if you get someone in here who maybe has a pretty good feel and understanding for what the assets or what the advantages of Toronto has as an NBA market and can maximize those and sort of minimize some of the drawbacks, you know, you've got a chance for some success. And in theory, his learning curve on that would be a lot, he'd be up to speed instantly versus trying to figure it out over time.
Is Dwayne Casey out of a job once a new GM is hired?
I don't think so. You know, I really don't. I mean, he's got 1 year left. He's not real expensive. So I think there's no reason, you know, unless there's a rock star candidate out there that the new GM absolutely has to have and the timing to get him is now. There's a very good chance that Dwayne Casey could, he could be almost like a Sam Mitchell situation a few years ago. You get that chance, and if you do well with it, you get an extension there. If you don't, you're the first bullet in the gun. The one aspect of there is a connection with Dwayne Casey going back to Denver. He was George Karl's longtime assistant there. So,
right.
You know, so, but I mean, again, this is all completely kind of up in the air and sort of oddly so, but that's what makes it fun, I guess.